In El Salvador, but also in countries around the world this week, church leaders and faithful of many different Christian denominations have been marking the 30th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Arnulfo Romero. Known by people in El Salvador simply as Monsignor, Archbishop Romero was shot dead on March 24, 1980, while saying Mass in the small chapel of a hospital where he lived in the capital, San Salvador. In just 3 years after being appointed to the archdiocese, Romero became an increasingly outspoken opponent of the government and military leadership, making public each week a list of the victims of violence and injustice. The day before his assassination, he openly challenged the military leadership in a homily broadcast across the country, urging soldiers not to follow orders and kill or oppress their fellow citizens. 3 decades on from his death, Romero is revered by many as the voice of the voiceless, an inspirational figure for all who struggle to uphold the values of human dignity, justice, and peace.
There is no doubt that he is a man of huge integrity, personal holiness, and a great inspiration to many.
On the anniversary of Romero's assassination, Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster, who's president of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, held a special mass in his London Cathedral, one of the many memorial events that took place this week in parishes and dioceses around the United Kingdom. I talked to Archbishop Nichols about Romero's legacy and inspiration for Catholics today, and the way he's increasingly being seen as an ecumenical Christian leader who transcended ideological barriers and boundaries.
Well, I think one of the things that we admire so much about Archbishop Romero was his determination to speak the truth. I visited El Salvador in 1985. And I recall very well how absolutely politicized everything was. It was a country in a firmament of ideology. And he was Archbishop Romero who just kept his eye exactly on describing what was happening and telling the truth about what was happening. And he did so from the clearest of motives, which was to defend human dignity, to speak up for those who had no voice, and to press the cause of the Church's social teaching.
It was a very different society, as you say, a very politicised society back in those days. How much, then, can he be a model for church leaders today?
Well, I think in this sense of telling things as they are. So I preached earlier this week about Archbishop Romero at a Mass here in Westminster Cathedral. And the lesson I drew from his life, and especially his 3 years as Archbishop of San Salvador, was that we should also be prepared to speak plainly about, for example, the effect of poverty in this country, about some of the care of the elderly in systems in our country, about the actual effect of sexual permissiveness in our country, and about the effects of the financial crisis. His first lesson is to tell things as they are, because so often in our world today, a story is used or manipulated to fit into a pre-established narrative, whereas he was not going to do that. He was not going to fit into the narratives of the left and the right. He was just going to say, this is how things are, and this is what we have to face.
His legacy is very much being taken up by other Christian church leaders as well, isn't it? You're taking part in a memorial service with the Archbishop of Canterbury in Westminster Abbey.
Yes, and I think that's a sign of how much he is esteemed in this country. And it goes back to the time of his life, and I was very glad to quote in our cathedral a letter written by Cardinal Hume to Archbishop Romero in 1977. Not long after he had become Archbishop of San Salvador. And similarly, on the facade of Westminster Abbey, there is already a statue to Archbishop Romero in among the martyrs of the modern age. So there will be a broad gathering of Christians in Westminster Abbey to praise God and to thank God for the example of Oscar Romero's life and we shall happily do that together.
And yet at the time of his assassination, if we look back to the 1980s, there were deep divisions, weren't there, in the Catholic Church as to how much his outspoken stance should be supported.
I think what was happening was the different ways in which his motivations were being interpreted. And I think that was happening to some extent because of the ferment in the El Salvador, and because it was seen entirely in terms of left and right, it was seen in terms of the resistance of the free world to communism. And it was a kind of cauldron of international tension. And I think one of the things that time shows is that Archbishop Romero kind of raised himself above that conflict of ideas and was faithful to the truth, which is then faithful to the gospel.
30 years on, as you say, there seems to be really little doubt about his martyrdom, about his motives, and yet the hoped-for beatification process has yet to begin. Why do you think this is, as he is so widely revered as an icon, as a saint in Central America and beyond?
Well, I really don't know. In Westminster Cathedral, the ambassador from El Salvador was present at the Mass, and he said to me at the end, the president of El Salvador at this time is publicly making an apology for the part they played in the death of the Monsignor, as he called him. And today in El Salvador, we are very much united around a single aim, you know, of building the country and of respecting and honouring his memory. I think, clearly, the inspiration that he gave and the courage that he showed are major parts of a process of the examination of his life and all his writings that must be going on in terms of a beatification. They are very clear, but presumably they're not the whole story. I really don't know. But there is no doubt that he is a man of huge integrity, personal holiness, and a great inspiration to many.
Archbishop Nicholls of Westminster is president of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. In El Salvador, meanwhile, people from all over the country have joined with visiting church leaders from many nations, marking the 30th anniversary of Romero's assassination. Salvadoran President Mauricio Funes led tributes to the slain archbishop in the capital, San Salvador, apologizing publicly for the role played by the government in his murder at the hands of a hired gunman. When he was elected in March 2009, the new president said he would work for the kind of government envisioned by Monsignor Romero, including a commitment to his option for the poor, a choice that Romero himself knew only too well would put him on a direct collision course with the elitist government and military leaders of his day.
As his death grew closer, he knew he was going to die. He saw his spiritual director on the very day he died and said he wanted to be clean before he met God.
Former director of the English Catholic aid agency CAFOD, Julian Filikowski, is also founder and chair of the Romero Trust, set up to promote greater awareness of the life and legacy of the assassinated Archbishop of San Salvador.
He today represents the essence of the option for the poor. He lived it, and he showed that the words were not some empty rhetoric of the last part of the 20th century, that they were something that could be lived. He was a martyr to the magisterium of the church because his work alongside the poor in support of human rights and social justice was all done on the basis of the gospel and Catholic social teaching, of which he was an expert and which he taught with great vigour and great energy throughout the 3 years he was Archbishop. So the justice and peace movements and reconciliation movements around the world see Oscar Romero as a kind of icon, an icon of holiness, an example. And there's great yearning across the world to see him beatified and canonized, because really we want him as a patron saint of our movements.
You're talking about his option, his preferential option for the poor. Tell us about the situation there today, the challenges facing the church in El Salvador today.
Well, the poor of El Salvador are poor, but the poorest people, or many of the poorest people, have left the country. It's a different economy. It's a different place. There's a huge number of Salvadorans who've emigrated to the United States and also to Mexico and other places nearby. And their remittances from their work, their very poorly paid work usually, is the biggest element in the dollars earned by El Salvador today. So the poor are actually holding the country together financially in that way. And the land question is no longer so acute as it was in Archbishop Romero's time. And it's become a financial center in some other ways. There has been progress, but the poor are poor and they need a pastor who cares about them. Interestingly, we've recently had a new archbishop in San Salvador, Archbishop Escobar Alas, a young bishop, and who is speaking in a very different language from his predecessor about the poor and about the place the poor have in the life of the church, and his commitment to Archbishop Romero and his beatification. And I think it's really, in every sense for the poor, a moment of new beginning that this year can bring for them.
So a real step on the road to reconciliation, which, as you say, has plagued the country. The scars of this war, this devastating civil war, which affected so many, it really is perhaps drawing to a close.
Yes, I mean, I think it really is, in a world where there is so many people downcast, so many places where they're in mourning. I think in El Salvador, it's a moment of hope and expectation. And we have to see how it works out, but with a goodwill and with the church working together with the new government and bringing the poor along and being active protagonists in processes of reform and change, it could be a great year.
Was it that first drew you to this cause with such passion? It's become really your life's work at the moment, hasn't it?
Well, I was very committed to human rights work in Latin America. In that work, I was very close to the Society of Jesus, who taught me in my secondary school in Great Britain. And through them, I got to know Archbishop Romero. And it's the greatest grace and privilege of my life to have worked with him. And I feel that his example is just so powerful at this juncture. He really is, hopefully, a saint for the 21st century. I think people admire him. He's used in diaconate training programs as a model. Confirmation classes ask for the material about him because they see him as a soldier for Jesus Christ in the very best sense of that word. And I think for the world around us, to be a Christian leader today, what we're looking for are people who are credible witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Oscar Romero is just utterly credible. He was a great, great witness to Jesus Christ. He was not a secularized bishop. He was not a populist bishop. He was a bishop with an immensely deep spirituality, a life of prayer. He made his decisions in contact with God. But he did it in absolute authentic fulfillment of the social teaching of the church. And as a man, he was loyal and author, as I said, an enthusiastic teacher of the church. But he also saw that the church was not just magister, it was matere magister. And so he was a wonderfully warm, encompassing, inclusive pastor. And he was really the beloved of the people there. And they cried, "We want bishops like Oscar Romero."
He was something of a reluctant leader, though, wasn't he? He didn't really fulfil this role until he was thrust into that position as Archbishop there.
Oh, very much so. He's got a trajectory from his early priesthood where he was a great preacher. He had great oratorical skills. He was a great communicator. He was a journalist. He ran 3 dozens of newspapers in different places he was. And he was very firm. And he was very committed to the poor. He gave all his belongings away when he was in San Miguel in the parishes. He used to have breakfast for the shoeshine boys. And he lived very, very simply. But that part was the kind of the hidden life. When he came to San Salvador, first of all, as an ecclesiastical bureaucrat, I think he was very disorientated and he lost his connection with the people at the grassroots. And he became really a very stuffy, haughty, pedantic ecclesiastical bureaucrat. And he was frightened by some of the things happening after the Council of Medellin and Vatican II. Not that he ever disowned them, but I think he had a midlife crisis. So people knew him at that time as someone who was a very defensive person and not someone who was embracing the Vatican II reforms. But we were wrong because the earlier Romero was the right one. So when he came to San Salvador, one has to recognize today, to the great dismay of the clergy and the people, it was a moment when he regained his balance and his equilibrium. He threw away those blue years of famine and became the pastor that he always was. And the killing within 2 weeks of his assuming office of Father Rutilio Grande, his friend, was a moment not of a Damascus moment when he was suddenly swiveled round at 180 degrees. It was a Gethsemane moment where, praying before his body, praying before his friend, he realized if he was to follow through what it would mean for him. And very soon afterwards, he wrote to one of the bishops in Latin America, "I think my new post has put me on the road to Calvary." And that was so prescient. And so he grew into the role. And the old, tetchy, impatient, slightly nasty bureaucrat, and people, we mustn't airbrush or whitewash that out of the history. That was that period was gone, and he actually, during his 3 years, went around to many of the communities when he was there. His first thing he did was to apologize for his behavior when he'd been with them before, that he had not lived up to the teaching of the church in the way that he treated them, and he wanted to make up to them. And that readiness to say mea culpa, to be self-critical of himself and of his church in a loyal and immensely committed way, was what made him what he was. And his motto, which was right across his mitre, was sentire come ecclesia, to feel for, to palpitate with the church, taken from St. Ignatius' Exercises.
My thanks there to the former director of the English Catholic Aid Agency, CAFOD, Julian Filakowski, who's also the founder and chair of the Romero Trust, set up to promote greater awareness of the life and legacy of the assassinated Archbishop of San Salvador. To find out more about the work of the Romero Trust, you can see their website www.romerotrust.org.uk with details about all the anniversary events that have taken place in Britain this week.